Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Not My First Schmodio. I'm your host, Ruby Raven, and we are broadcasting live from the unceded, ancestral, and stolen land of the Halkomelem-speaking Musqueam people in the city that is colonially known as Vancouver. Today, our guest is comedian Ronald Dario. Hello, Ronald. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Ruby. Thank you for having me here.
How are you?
Really good. Enjoying that lead-in music.
Yes. What did you think of it?
I thought it sounded a lot like a CW. Right at
yes.
the end when like Archie's staring at Veronica and we're just teasing to the next episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except now they're in an alternate universe for some reason.
Is that what's happening?
Based on Instagram, I think that's what's going on at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for them.
Good for them.
Good for them. River Vale, I think it's called now.
They film around here, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
A lot, probably. You see the production trucks all the time.
Yes. And so please keep feeding our economy.
Yes. Me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, as I said, our guest, Ronald Dario. Dario?
I say Dario most of the time, but my parents and my, through our family, it's pronounced both ways. So
okay,
it
good.
It does not matter.
Oh, phew. Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Nothing matters.
So, last time when I interviewed Carrie, who you know,
yes.
I started off with a hard-hitting question.
Oh, no.
And she was caught off guard. So I'm going to ask you another hard-hitting question.
Okay.
What did you have for breakfast this morning?
What did I have for breakfast this morning? Like a mint Clif bar.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did it have chocolate in it?
It was a chocolate one, yeah.
Okay.
It's like the ones that are more like chocolate bars.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Those, I eat those exclusively.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Cool.
Ooh.
There we go.
Was any of that usable?
I think it was.
Okay. Do you want, because I can vamp and try to remember.
It was good. Yeah. Awesome.
Mintcliff Bar.
Yes.
Yeah, which you
There was some technical difficulties, but we're all good. Thank you, Dora, for
coming
in here and doing that. Okay, awesome. So now that I'm done with the super hard-hitting question and the super hard-hitting answer, my next question would be, how did you get into comedy?
How did I get into comedy? I'm a giant comedy nerd since I was a kid. It was the only way for me to get attention was to like act out and be annoying.
Yeah, I relate.
Yeah, I think all comedians have, many comedians have the same story. Yeah. Big fan of sketch comedy. Mm-hmm. I tried to do as much as I possibly could to like learn about sketch comedy. So I would obviously read all of the Saturday Night Live autobiographies or whatever that I could.
Oh, what was your favorite?
Autobiography?
Yeah. I love reading autobiographies.
Don't know if it was an autobio. It might have been like an unauthorized thing, but it was of like Gilda Radner.
Oh, did you watch that documentary about Gilda
Radner? I haven't. I feel like I'm going to be so sad when I do. Oh. I really want to, though.
It was so good.
Yeah, I loved her so much. Yeah. And the library had like a VHS copy of like her special from a while ago. And I would like borrow it from the library a whole bunch. And so I really loved...
that is peak comedy nerd. Borrowing things from the library to experience comedy.
Yes. And like Gilda Radner had been off TV and probably had been passed away long before I started to pick up this book. But like I was like, I wanted to know about the SNL cast and stuff like that. And all of them talk so much about like improv and how important Second City was to them. Mm-hmm. And so I learned a little bit about that. In school... skits and all that stuff. I was just that kid who always wanted to do that thing. Instead of a presentation, I would do sketches, which, we all called skits back then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, 100%. I was the exact same. If we could, do an interpretation of Shakespeare in, some play form, I would 100% do that rather than writing an essay.
Yeah. And I would the bad thing was I always got positive or negative reinforcement. My teachers always loved that I tried to do something funny in English class or social studies or whatever. But I really I didn't go to a school that had CIG or which is the Canadian Improv Games, which happens all over Canada in a lot of different places, but not at the school that I was at. So I didn't really have the chance to do improv as a young person. I took drama classes and we would do a little bit of improv, and that was the only thing that I enjoyed in those classes. It wasn't until I was an adult and I started to just watch some local comedy. I watched the Sunday Service and groups like Kip Bang and Lorax, and I was like, I want to do that kind of comedy. And I was actually going to move to Toronto and go to the Second City and take classes there, and also at Bad Dog Theater that's in Toronto. But as I was actually, and I was telling this to Tom Hill and Devin recently,
who
work at Blind Tiger Comedy, and they're part of a group called Hip Bang, and also I perform with them in a group called Treat Joe with Carrie, who we mentioned earlier. So it's all tying together.
Yes.
I was telling them that I actually had cheapo flights or whatever the thing was to look at cheap airline the cheapest airline flights to Toronto and the Second City schedule open to see when classes were going to be happening, because I was going to go to Toronto to take all of these classes because I felt like that had more of the comedy that I wanted to do in Vancouver. I love the Sunday Service. I loved Hip Bang, but they weren't really teaching. But as I was doing that, at the exact same time as I was trying to figure out and do the math of how long I need to stay there and how much it was going to cost, Blind Tiger started following me on Twitter. And then I saw that they were doing classes, and it was all these people that I thought were so, so funny. And I decided to stick around in Vancouver. And I took classes, and I took every single class that you could take. I was taking improv classes and sketch classes at the same time. I was also taking classes at Instant Theater, which was a comedy improv school.
Which isn't around anymore.
It isn't around anymore.
I hear about it a lot from people at Blind Tiger.
Yeah. A lot of people who maybe have taken classes with probably took some classes near the end of Instant Theater. And then for the most part, everybody who's teaching, the majority of people who are teaching at Blind Tiger had took classes at Instant or were a part of Instant for some time. But I was thinking I was doing three classes, four classes a week. I loved it. And
that's what I'm doing basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically, I'm you now. I'm basically
you're
you.
Me.
Yeah.
Oh, please release me from this curse.
So for the listeners, Ronald was I feel weird calling you Ronald because you always sign your emails Ronnie.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm cool with,
either.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm cool with either.
So Ron Neild, he was my improv teacher like very recently. And so I thought he was really funny. So I wanted to interview him. And that is the origin story of how he ended up on Not My First Schmodio.
Yeah.
But
Ruby's very funny.
Oh, thank you very much. But I had been asking you all these questions about like what the scene was like in Vancouver and, you know, how you got started. And like, have you performed outside of Vancouver at all?
I have. Yeah. I've performed in New York and LA and Toronto and Edmonton.
And how did you find like the vibe of like Vancouver versus other cities in terms of the comedy vibe and the audience vibe?
I mean, in a lot of these places, especially in a place like LA or New York, where I was performing and watching a lot of shows at like, you know, the Upright Citizens Brigade or like or just a bunch of theaters like the Pit in New York and stuff like that. A lot of the audience is already trained a lot when it comes to like watching improv and sketch comedy, where I feel like Vancouver's, it's still a niche of it's way bigger than even when I started to do comedy a couple of years ago here. But it is still a niche of a niche. Like a lot of your audience is going to be expecting something closer to stand-up, I guess, when they're coming to these shows. So
when they're coming to your improv and sketch shows, which is what the type of comedy you do.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's something like either you're going to have a lot of people who are already part of the community and then newer people who they do enjoy it, but it takes them a little while to acclimatize to it. So I don't think Vancouver specifically has fully that language yet of like what improv and sketches were.
Do you find that difficult?
Sometimes. not usually. I think as soon as they, for the most part, I found that people who have come to improv and sketch shows, as soon as they realize that like we won't make fun of them or we don't really do a lot, we ask for suggestions. We might interview somebody that's always like on a volunteer basis, but we don't do like crowd work where we like make fun of people and stuff like that. The second that they kind of realize that, I think they
relax
a bunch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they find out that we're not going to pull them on stage, like unless somebody's, if we do something like a game like Day in the Life or whatever, like and actually have somebody, it's usually somebody who's volunteering. It's usually that person.
And those people are normally like itching to get up there.
Yeah, they want to. Yeah. Then like we don't have to do like the entire thing about those games where we bring an audience up there is like that's the easiest thing for us because we just let them do whatever and the audience is going to react to it. Anyway, so they're doing us a favor by coming on stage.
I mean, I went and saw one of your shows, Treat Show.
Yes.
Saturday night at the China Cloud.
Yeah.
Super funny.
Thank you.
And I went and I had never actually seen a Blind Tiger show. Like, I had been taking lots of classes there, but it was, you know, pandemic times. And so this was my first show that I had seen. And I took my friend, and you know, when you like take your friend to something and you're always kind of nervous, it's you feel responsible for the outcome of the show.
For sure.
Because you are like taking them.
And it's something that you also that you are like, I like this. I want to do this. And so if they're like, you want to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stakes are high. And the show was so funny. Like afterwards, I was so energized. Like I was buzzing. And I went and I talked to Carrie for like 30 minutes. And we were just like bidding back and forth because I was so energized by the show. And I thought you were so creative, like the type of improviser you are, you know, from my vantage point was like very creative, very weird. Like there were all these random suggestions that you made of like volleyballs being your children.
Oh, yeah.
And you probably don't remember because you improvised like a million times. But how would you describe yourself as an improviser?
Definitely. I like weird. Yeah. I like to be weird on stage, but I also like it to make sense. Like I try to, even when I'm playing a deadpan character, which I a lot of times do, I say something ridiculous, but I always want it to be grounded. I don't want it to be random. I want it to make sense for the character that I'm saying. I don't want to be weird for weirdness sake. I want it to like connect with what has been said previously.
Yeah.
And obviously I also don't want to like just give my scene partners just garbage to work with. Yeah. And like, so they're just like, I have no idea what to do with this. I always try to make the weirdness like make sense.
Yeah.
Somebody said about my improv style a while ago, it was cute but gross.
Huh.
And sometimes sad.
That's how people describe my personality. Interesting.
No, you need to bring that on stage, Ruby.
No, I'm kidding. But, speaking of the type of improviser you are, in one of the classes you shared with us that you had been in an accident.
Yeah.
And it had changed some of your brain cognition.
Yes.
And you said that it had changed you as an improviser. And I found that really interesting. So I'm wondering if you could talk more about that.
Yeah, I had a traumatic brain injury a couple of years ago. When I was, I mean, I was maybe like 2 years into doing improv, taking classes and starting to do shows. I had actually just seen, it was after an improv rehearsal. I had just seen Carrie and a few of our other friends. After it has affected my cognition, in my everyday life, like there are days where brain fog is setting, set in for a couple of days. I have a hard time searching for the words that I want to say. Mm-hmm. But when I'm on stage, it doesn't affect me. And one of my doctors, told me that that is something that happens with, some people who have brain injuries. Like if they're creatives, the creative part of your brain is not affected the same way that your regular, everyday thinking would be affected. So I've long COVID, and so I've been having even more brain fog. But at shows, when I'm on stage or when I'm doing a faculty thing or whatever, like that other side kicks in, and I'm able to speak. I don't have to like hunt for the words that I need to say. I'm able to do characters. I'm able to do callbacks and I'm able to remember things that I wouldn't when I'm not on stage. It's really, really interesting. I know I haven't looked too much into it, but I know there's some research being done with when it comes to like Alzheimer's patients and improv and how that sort of like unlocks like a different part of their cognition, and they're able to like be coherent. Like they're able to be a lot more lucid and coherent than they normally would.
Wow. And has it changed your style in any way?
I think it definitely did. I think it was a big life thing also.
Yeah.
And I think it just allowed me to get over any sort of hesitancy that I had when it comes to being weird. In the first 2 years you could talk to Carrie and Allie about it. Allie's another person who performs with Carrie and I. But I was a very grounded performer before. Mm-hmm. Like I would always be the straight man, is the term, but we say grounded character now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just for any comedy nerds who are not sure what grounded character means. I would play just the grounded character, and I was a little more hesitant to be weird on stage. But after the accident, I just was like, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to be weird and just see where that takes me. And it really, yeah, I think I was a good improviser before, but I think I finally felt like I was doing the kind of improv and the kind of comedy that I actually wanted to do.
So, I mean, that's so interesting because like from this thing that's been so difficult, you've gotten this very interesting change in yourself that isn't necessarily negative. So how do you feel about that?
I don't know. I talk about it. There's some I definitely post the accident. I was able to I was more comfortable with doing darker content, veering into the more darker content when I'm on stage and stuff like that. It definitely is something that has changed and allowed me to be the kind of performer that I wanted to be, but it's not necessarily something that I wanted to happen order for it to happen, because there are a bunch of other things in my everyday life that the injury has affected and continues to affect. So and for a while now I'm just trying to take the best out of like the situation.
And this is a silver lining. For sure, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're almost coming to the end of our interview.
Oh.
But I'm wondering if you can, for my sake, please plug some of the stuff you have going on, some of the shows that people should come see.
Yeah, I do a show every Tuesday at a space called the Tightrope Improv Theater with my group Little Mountain Improv. So it's a Tuesday night show. And then I do a show every Saturday with my group Treat Show, the one that Ruby was mentioning.
Which I
earlier.
Loved, and I like literally tell everyone to go to.
Yeah. It's a very, very, they're both very, very fun shows with people who I really, really love. And anything, if anybody is going to be in Edmonton for Improvaganza, Tricho will be performing a couple nights there.
Wait, when is that?
That is next weekend. Oh. Yeah, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is when most of Tricho will be there. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be in a bunch of different shows over there in Improvaganza. Improvaganza is one of the best and biggest improv festivals in North America. It's so fun. Yeah, and it's back for the first time in 2 years. So
go if you're going to be in Edmonton.
If you're in Edmonton, yeah.
Because, yeah, if you're not going to the mall, you better be going to
the... I mean, the mall... Oh, yeah, the mall is... the mall is huge, and it feels like being in space.
Yeah.
In a depressing way.
Yeah, in a good way.
In a depressing way.
All right, well, thank you. We will be back. Next up, I have my correspondent, Shaq, interviewing Liam Browning, who has written a book called How to Yell at Your Mom. So stay tuned for that after the break.
Correspondent Shaq, and this is the Oshmoyu.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
The Sweetgrass Clan is a volunteer-based coalition that provides safety, security, and essential resources to the most vulnerable members of the downtown Eastside community. In addition to providing food and safety, the Sweetgrass Clan also connects people with advocates for housing, mental health counseling, and drug and alcohol detox. The Sweetgrass Clan is always looking for new volunteers to support the downtown Eastside community and are able to offer volunteers grocery gift cards and bus tickets as honorariums. If you would like to offer your volunteer support to the Sweetgrass Clan, you can reach out via email at abfrontdoor.org or visit abfrontdoor.org.
Oh,
Welcome back to Not My First Shmodio. I am a correspondent, Shaq, and this is the Oh Shmo You Don't segment, where we interview some temporary non-shmos who are an expert in their field. Today, we have Liam Browning on the show. Liam has recently written a book called Silence No Longer: Why You Should Yell at Your Mom. Hello, Liam. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Liam, your book is very long, almost 600 pages. Why?
Well, I really wanted to get my point across, you know, and make sure I expressed myself. This book is about self-expression, and yelling at your mom is self-expression. Because in the modern day, you know, we hear a lot about empathy and the idea of talking it through. But there's been a lot of academic literature in the past 5 years that disagree with these popular notions, specifically when it comes to adolescent boys.
What exactly does the literature say?
The academic literature is saying that teenage boys need a certain level of freedom of speech that society is just not allowing. Studies have shown that it's hard for teenage boys to have to hold back their anger against their mothers in particular, and it goes against a biological need a growing boy has to express himself. I wanted to write this book to make sure teenage boys were expressing themselves in proper and effective ways that benefited them.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Silence No Longer: Why You Should Yell at Your Mom, 300 of the 600 pages are filled with personal examples of times you yourself have yelled at your mom and the ways in which those arguments benefited you. Could you perhaps share a few examples that you use in your book?
I would love to, Shaq.
Thank you.
So the first example that comes to mind is a tortilla chip example. You know, I'm sure you remember it vividly.
I do, yes.
I'm so glad. I'll be reading the transcript from an argument I had with my mom. The book, as you said, is a half transcript. Mm-hmm. So this is one with my mom. I will be reading both parts. So you know, I start off by saying, "Mom, literally, what the hell? I asked for Fiesta tortilla chips." And then she said, "I know, I looked. They didn't have any." "Mom, were you at the Safeway on Granville Street?" "What? Were you at the Safeway on Granville Street?" "The one on Granville Street? Yes, I was. I was literally just there yesterday. I know for a fact they had a whole shelf of Fiesta tortilla chips." "Well, I don't know what to tell you. They didn't have them today." "I know you're lying. You just don't want me eating them." "They aren't healthy anyways. We have a ton of food in the fridge." "There's literally nothing to eat. I don't know what you're talking about." "The fridge is full of food." "Full of food? It's all condiments. Great parenting, Mom. What am I supposed to eat? A bowl of different sauces?" Something like that.
Wow. And you typed that entire transcript from memory. Is that correct?
That's right.
Wow.
You know, so in that interaction, did you see how I reacted with hyperbole, stating that the only thing in the fridge is condiments? Hyperbole is very important to properly expressing yourself because it's crucial that you really mean it. Hyperbole makes it hard for anyone to really argue back, and therefore the emotional center of the brain is satisfied.
That makes sense. You say a lot of academic studies that link yelling with your mother to many health and overall life benefits. Could you perhaps name a few?
According to a professor at Yale, Dr. Chad Kavanaugh, the tantrum allows the boy to be heard and acknowledged for his experience, rather than remaining in a state of being dismissed and bullied. It allows the teenage boy to really regain control of the narrative and finally be heard. Because when they don't, for example, get the tortilla chips they asked for, they are being told that they don't matter.
Wow, that's really something. So in chapter 104, you highlight the importance of not justifying yourself. Could you perhaps read an example of this from your transcript?
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
So this next example takes place on a boat, on a lake, on a family vacation.
Mm-hmm.
"Jesus, it's fine, Mom. I'm wearing the stupid life jacket. Leave me alone." "The sun's rays can still get you even after it's cloudy out." "Mom, stop rubbing the sunscreen on my face." "Do you want to get a sunburn?" "I'm not going to get a sunburn. It's fine. You always do this. I tell you I don't want something, and then you give it to me anyway." "What do you mean?" "Oh, Mom, I don't know. You just do. Don't care if I get sunburned. Sunscreen pollutes the water anyway." "I just saw you dump a whole 7-layer dip into the lake. God, stop watching everything I do."
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
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 Mm-hmm. So that example is incredibly multifaceted, as I'm sure you picked up on, Shaq.
Yes.
The lack of justification is only one component. But did you see how I brought up a vague grievance from the past? Something you always do, but didn't give any context and ignored an invitation to explain what I meant. This is imperative to self-expression. Teenage boys shouldn't have to explain themselves to justify themselves when they're in the middle of a tantrum. It can throw off their ability to feel heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in your book, you write about how to properly express yourself when your mom is being, and I quote, too much. Can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, this has been one of the most powerful parts of writing the book. A lot of teenage boys who've read the book have reached out to me and shared that they really connected with this part and it helped them get through some tough times. Because, you know, it's important to completely disregard what your mother is doing and or saying, dismissing any and all concerns that is key here. So just for context in this next one, I was about to go on a grade 12 camping trip in the woods. Mom, you're being so paranoid! The forest is filled with ticks. Do you know what happens when you get a tick bite? Lyme's disease! God, Mom, I'm not going to get Lyme's disease! That's right, you're not, because I'm buying you a head-to-toe bug net. I'm not wearing that, it's so dumb! They're so cool, paired with like a cool tank top underneath. All the ladies will take note. They'll think you're hunky for taking care of yourself. God, Mom, you're so annoying! What are you Googling? Mom, what are you Googling? Canadian Tire is having a sale on bug nets. Put your shoes on. Let's go. I'm not going to freaking Canadian Tire. It's fine. I'd rather get Lyme's disease.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So as you heard, I didn't give a reason why it was fine. I simply just said it and expected her to agree. You know, it's important to get even louder when your mom tries to do research about the things she's being overcautious about. This encourages your opinion and point of view to be the dominant one. It's important that your opinion is not torn down by evidence and or facts.
All right, well, that was Liam Browning here to promote his new book, Silence No Longer, Why You Should Yell at Your Mom. Liam, thank you so much for being
here
today.
Thank you for having me, Shaq.
Stay tuned for The Shmoment with Ruby and guest Ronald Dario coming up after the break.
Join us every Saturday from 8 till noon for Saturday's Edge with your host, Steve Edge, as he guides you on a journey to world and roots music with African, Latin, and European music in the first half, followed by Celtic, blues, songwriters, and Cajun in the second half.
Tribe Called Red is the Hallucination, with their new record, One More Saturday Night, featuring Javier Mighty, Tanya Tagak, and more, out now.
Hello, Ronald.
Hi, Ruby.
Welcome back.
We're back.
Yes, we are back Welcome back to Not My First Schmodio. For those of you just tuning in, the schmo I have with me here today is Ronald Dario.
I'm honored to be here and to be a schmo.
Yes, you should be honored to be a schmo. I am also honored to be a schmo, and everyone should be honored to be a schmo. If you can't tell, this is the schmoment part of Not My First Schmodio. The schmoment is the segment where we share times that we've embarrassed ourselves in public. I define a schmoment, as I just said, as a time when you feel you've really stepped in it in public. And the reason why it's a schmoment is because I define a schmo as someone who is a regular, average person, but also someone who is kind of a fool. And I really want to normalize embarrassing yourself in public, make it an average person thing, hence the schmoment. So, Ronald, Ronnie, you have brought us a tasty little schmoment.
Yes, I have.
So I'm wondering if you can share a schmoment with me.
Yes, I would love to. About 6 years ago, I got a job on a commercial as an actor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I needed it. it was my first big commercial that had a buyout, which is for the rights and stuff like that. They give you a couple $1,000s so that they can air it and a whole bunch. So it was a big deal for me. I was like, this is going to be my moment. This is going to be the thing that gets me booking more things, and it really didn't.
You thought it was going to be your moment.
I thought it was going to be
my moment. Ended up being your schmoment.
My schmoment. when you book a commercial or anything, most things that have more of a budget, usually there's a wardrobe fitting that happens a couple days before you actually shoot. So for this commercial, they had a wardrobe fitting, and it was at the Hyatt downtown, and they rented out the ballroom there. And I woke up in the morning and I was feeling really, really sick. I had the stomach flu. Oh. I was throwing up.
Oh.
And I had to make the call. I'm like, if I don't go to this wardrobe fitting, I'm not going to get, they're going to replace me with somebody else.
That's the worst type of sick to be in that situation. Because if you have a cold, pre-COVID times, you could fake it. But when there's stuff actively coming out of your body, it's much harder to hide.
Oh, for sure. So I woke up and I'm like, I am not doing well. I was sweating. I was sweating through. I woke up just soaked. And I was I had to make the decision. I'm like, do I do this? Do I say that I can't do this and turn down this thing that was seemingly not as important now in hindsight, but was very, very important to me at the time. And I was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to do it. So I emptied myself as much as I could before leaving. And then I got onto the train and I was on the train I just was like, oh, no, I'm going to pass out. I was so nauseated and so dizzy on the train. I was sweating profusely. And I was like, it kicked into the animal brain. I'm like, I need to lie down. So I lie down on the floor of a train. And just think about how dirty and disgusting any public transit is. So I was lying down on the train. People were staring at me. I was like, I don't give a I don't care.
Yeah.
For three stops, I was just on the floor, moaning and being like, is this worth it? What has my life become for an edible arrangements commercial? And it was getting to Burrard, which is very close to the Hyatt, and I stood up and I started getting really, really shaky. And I was waiting at the door because I'm like, I'm going to vomit. And so the train stops and the door isn't opening yet because it takes a second. I throw up in my mouth before the door opens. And it's I think seeing it from the outside, it might've been very cinematic. The door opens, I walk straight to the garbage can. It's the one where you flip the lid and then it opens up.
Yeah.
So I flipped it. I emptied all of the vomit into the garbage can, closed the lid, and then just made my way up into the Hyatt. Finally I got there and there were so many people, there were directors, producers, the president of the company, I think, was there too. Everybody wanted to have their stamp on what everything and what all the characters look like in this commercial where I'm in it for 3 seconds.
The edible arrangements commercial.
Yeah, the holiday commercial. I don't think you can even find it anymore.
I wish we could.
So it took and each person was going, and each person needed to go to the stylist, and we were mixing and matching a whole bunch. There was it was a ballroom, and it was just full of clothing racks, and people were coming in, PAs or whoever were coming in with bags from like Urban Outfitters and Holt Renfrew and The Bay, and like they were amassing more and more clothing, so there was so many options. And so I was just standing there sweating into all of the different
and a real
expensive,
dirty type of sweat too. Yeah, not like a cute sweat.
No, it was nothing cute about it. And I every like anytime somebody's like, "Hey, let's try you in this," I'd be like, "Oh yeah, absolutely." And the second they went away, I'd be like, and just like, I'd be like, "I need to go to the washroom," and just go to the washroom, just stare at myself in the mirror, like just putting cold water onto myself. And so I finally got like a outfit that like the stylist liked, and they wanted the director and the director and one of the producers and I think somebody from the company for medical arrangements to check it out. So I stood in the hallway where they were going to just take pictures for continuity and stuff like that. So it was actually the director who had an iPad, and I'm wearing now like probably like, you know, like a $400 shirt, something that I would not normally wear. Yeah. And I was standing in there. I'm like, "Oh no, I'm going to throw up." And he held up the iPad and he's like, "Okay, one, two, three." And on three, I threw up all over my shirt. And it also got onto these really nice, expensive shoes. And they looked down and he looked down at the photo and he's like, I got that at the perfect moment. And I was like, "Oh, they're going to fire me. They're going to fire me." So I was like, "I'm sorry, I'm pretty sick. And like, I just didn't want to miss out on this commercial." And they were actually like very nice about it. They were
arrangements, of course.
Yeah.
Like, we expect nothing less from edible arrangements.
And I was eating snacks and stuff like that just to have something inside of me while I was doing it. So I probably threw up a bunch of edible arrangements all over myself too.
So they probably were like, "It's okay that you vomited because you vomited our product."
Yeah, it's like brand synergy. Yeah.
I think that's the definition of brand synergy.
It is. It's a different way to do it.
Yeah.
But they changed. Like I had to go and get changed, and somebody actually had to help me out of my shoes because at this point I was just like out of it.
Oh.
So somebody had to take me out of my shoes, and I'm like, now in retrospect, I'm like, with everything that's happened in the world, I'm like, "Oh, I probably got a PA like sick with the stomach flu because they had to like handle everything and stuff like that too." But like at the time, it just like. I also didn't want anybody to be mad at me because I have like this thing where I'm like, I don't want anybody to be mad at me. But yeah, I threw up in front of a director of the thing that I ended up shooting and a whole bunch of other people. And maybe on his iPad or maybe it uploaded to iCloud afterwards, there's a picture of me just with vomit all over myself.
Projectile vomiting somewhere in the cloud.
Yeah. Onto an Armani shirt.
Wow. Well, that's a real rosh moment.
Yes.
And there were multiple microsh moments in there too.
A lot, yeah,
there
yeah.
There was one macrosh moment that contained a lot of smaller microsh moments.
Yeah, don't we all contain multitudes?
We really do, yeah.
What's yours, Ruby?
Thank you so much for sharing that, Ronald.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate that. This is my movement. I am trying to normalize embarrassing yourself in public, and I hope that you feel like it's more normal after you've shared that.
I do. I do improv in front of people all the time, so I feel
like
I'm getting
better. You do the equivalent
embarrassed.
Of projectile vomiting
yeah.
in front of people all
oh,
the
yeah,
time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm sure I've done 100 characters who've just thrown up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I actually saw you do one. You
probably.
Went like a, and you like put your finger down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a shmoment of mine is from when I was 17 years old.
Oh.
And I was getting my first colonoscopy, girls, frills, coli. And
you bought champagne.
Yeah. And I went and, you know, when I'm 17, even now at 20, I still, with doctors or people that I don't know, servers, whatever, I use my waitress voice. "Hi, thank you so much. It's really nice. Oh, haha. Yeah, so nice to meet you. Hi." Like, high-pitched, pleasant.
Disney princess,
favorite ice cream flavors, vanilla. Like, that's the voice. And so I come in and I have these meetings with the doctor and then, you know, I'm about to have the procedure and I'm speaking, you know, so softly and so lovely. And I go into the procedure and, you know, they drug me up and it's like, I don't know, it's not anesthesia because I'm not completely like passed out. Like I still have vague sort of spotty memories of what happened. And They roll me into the room, and there's like 15 people in this colonoscopy room. Like, I think they must be training some people. There's like multiple doctors, the anesthesiologist. There's like 90 nurses. Like, literally there were 15 people in the room. And I remember they were asking me all these questions, and I was so out of it. I obviously had no filter. And as soon as they, you know, entered the thing into my body,
yes.
I started swearing. Is it after 9? Okay, I can't swear on the radio, but I started being like, oh, frick, shoot, damn, like really, really aggressive swear words, and swearing very aggressively. And they're all like chuckling along. And they asked me at one point, oh, like, tell us, do you have any siblings? Do you have a brother? You know, what's he like? And I sort of start to tell them, and I go, oh, yeah, he's like, wait a minute, you guys don't really care. And they sort of like all abrupt and all in laughter. And when they roll me out, I start doing lemon face, lion face. So after the procedure, they roll me out and I'm lemon face, lion facing for like 10 minutes. I finally come to and I'm like, God, you know, I feel great. I feel really at one with my body. And the doctor comes over. And she says, everything's fine. Ruby's great, healthy. But whew, she sure does swear a lot. But it's okay. I've seen The Sopranos. And I was like, this poor woman. I am this cute 17-year-old girl. I'm coming in. And I swear as much as a show on HBO about gangsters. So I think that I had really startled her. And I think that I, like, hit on a nurse. Anyways.
Really Tony Soprano style.
Yeah, I really just Tonied it up. And it was quite embarrassing to have been in that position. But if there's anyone to, you know, embarrass yourself in front of, it's probably a butt doctor.
Yeah.
That's
why they got into it, probably.
Yeah, they wanted to be entertained.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Yeah. So that was my schmoment, and it was quite embarrassing, but me and my mom still laugh about that story all the time. And, yeah, that is my schmoment of the week. Yeah.
I was waiting for like a drop or something. It was like schmoment of the week.
I want to get that. I want to get like a button where you go schmoment or like, you just got schmoed or like something like that. Yeah. I'm working on it. I need like one of those boards that has
season
something
two.
Like that. Yes, on season two. Stay tuned for the curated noises. Anyways, Ronald, we've come to the end of our hour. Thank you so much for being here and for sharing your schmoment and for sharing your story. And go to Treat Show on Saturday nights at China Cloud or Tuesday at Tightrope for more of Ronald Dario.
Yeah, Little Mountain Improv.
Little Mountain Improv. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we will get back to it. Wait, where's 3DO DJ? First time. This was my first live show, by the way.
You did so well.
Thank you. There were a couple hiccups, but this was my first live show, and I was very, I think it went smoothly. Thanks.
I think it did. Yeah,
Shout out to Dora.
Thank you, Dora.
If they're still here. They were. I just saw them. But yeah, all right. Let's end now. Okay.
Let's end now.
Bye.
I'm Shani from Inepsi. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
That was a, like, I wasn't sure when you were small. I was like, that's a huge show.
Ride around and tell each other all the things that we've